coming to you from various places around the world. This is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
It's your ability to take the time to find someone to trust that will allow you to be successful within foreign territory. And that's, to me, is enjoyable to be able to find that person. Have the customer at the end of it say, Larry, I don't know how we could have done it without you. And how many times, Jeff, I'm sure you've had that happen. There's nothing more.
It's a good feeling.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, hello, everyone. We're broadcasting today live from Naples, Florida, where it happens to be the coldest day of the year in Florida. And we've been in the Everglades, where we've been having a blast, actually, a really cold blast, riding super fast in airboats and holding on to some alligators. So it's been quite fun and interesting and not your everyday kind of day. Anyway, moving on to the podcast. It's an honor to have this guest with us today. I consider him a pioneer in blazing the trail for international exhibiting. He's also a friend and a mentor. And he's made a lifelong, over 40 years, contribution to the trade show and exhibit industry on a global basis. He's led many organizations. He's formed countless partnerships. He's forged into places many find difficult to do business. And he's worked to develop exhibit design programs at the collegiate level as well. He speaks and teaches regularly at various conferences. And he's authored a book, which is in its second edition. And if you haven't guessed it by now, our guest today is Mr. Larry Kulchewick. This is part two of a two-part interview with Larry Kulchewick, which I hope you enjoy on the Global Exhibitor Podcast.
Which countries would you say are the most difficult places to work in, if that's fair to say, for us as Americans or for your in your own experience?
Well, for us as Americans, perhaps the countries that South America, for example, there you better have a good CNI dog to help you, because you're going to work. We're talking about carpenters that you're trying to help set up the exhibit, design it, build it, whatever. So, believe it or not, France and Italy are not as English common as you'd like to believe. Germany, the Netherlands, English, even Singapore and some Asian countries are very. Hong Kong, for example, English is not, that's not the issue. So as a result of our lack of ability, Americans, to speak another language, we depend on those that do understand English to the level we'd expect. But the most difficult country to do exhibits is the United States. The land of the free is just not so free, you know? We have more rules and regulations, and this is the way you do it then. And we take that baggage with us overseas, and believe it or not, we're succeeding in bringing concepts like drayage to Europe and Asia. What do you, drayage, it's like a dirty word in our industry. And I can't tell you how many European and or Asian customers who are very expert all over the world, and we have this long discussion about, why do you have unions? I don't want to use your union guys. We got our...
Oh, yeah.
I said, I've heard why? What's with this drayage? I don't want to pay that. I'm not paying that. I said, you know, I agree with you, but it's not going to go away tomorrow. And all I can do is make it less painful and less costly. So until it changes, stop talking about what it should be, because what it is what it is, so let's deal with it. And why does the world put up with our American ways? Hey, you want to sell your products good in a strong marketplace? Yep. These are the rules. Because if people were coming here exhibiting and not getting results in any, why would they spend that kind of money? They are getting results, and they are putting up with our way of doing things. We were kind of isolated from the world, and it came to the rules and regulations, the masters of it. Second masters are the Germans, of course, but who claim to be the inventors of
the
trade show marketing the way it's supposed to be. And, you know, there's a lot to be, I'm being facetious, but they truly are the experts.
They do understand it really well.
Oh, yeah.
So what has been your most rewarding aspect of working, just not so much in the industry, but working globally?
I think there's some enjoyment about being a CNI dog that takes a person across a river and making your way there. And in doing this, you really need a partner. And IFAS happens to be one, but there's all kind of good companies to trust in the world. It's your ability to take the time to find someone to trust that will allow you to be successful within a foreign territory. And that's, to me, is enjoyable, to be able to find that person, have the customer at the end of it say, Larry, I don't know how we could have done it without you. And how many times, Jeff, I'm sure you've had that happen. There's nothing more.
It's a good feeling.
Oh, absolutely. You know what the other good feeling is? When that show is just opened and you're leaving and I'm going home, and it's just like a load off your shoulder that it took months to get to that point where the show opened and things are going and you've done what you can do. I can't tell you how to sell once that show starts, but we're starting to as an industry, and our industry is evolving. This whole carpenter mentality is no longer carpenters. We're marketing experts.
True.
Even more so than the top advertising agencies, our influence. We haven't reached that point where we're better than J.W. Thompson or whatever, Saatchi & Saatchi, but we're getting there.
No, absolutely. I think it's a hugely influential role that we play in getting even stronger, which is great, I think. What would you say would be your legacy in the industry?
I think, and I said when we started this discussion, how we all fumbled into this business, me included. And I had a degree in architecture and design, and my mother would always say, Larry, when are you going to be an architect? You know, designing exhibits at the time. After 10 years of this question, I said, Mom, I kind of am an architect, just that I'm not building the buildings. Yeah. What we build is a building, and then I have to take it down and put it up again somewhere else. So it's kind of a form of architecture. And after she said that, I became very proud of what I fumbled into. And my focus has been on education big time. Starting this FIT program, Master's Degree in Exhibit Design. I don't think there's another university in the world that has a program like it. Bemidji has a program, it's undergrad, and they do a wonderful job there as well. But many other universities have raised their hand and said, we would like to do this too. And my feeling is we don't want all these universities providing a degree in exhibit design. It's like going to astronaut school. How many people are going to actually get a chance to go to the moon? Our industry is big, but it's not huge. And so I'd rather focus on these one or two institutions, maybe another one in Asia and Europe. And there are schools, but they're not offering a master's degree, which is more than just the structure. And that's the important thing, is that we're not talking about designing structures. We're talking about designing environments that create an experience, that create results that are measurable at the end of that whole $1 million investment or whatever it might be. I'm so proud to say that, you know, FIT or any school that's beginning to teach, why does everybody have to fumble 10 years like I did or you did, Jeff, before you finally realize, hey, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Let's get them started doing that in 3 years and really
make their lives a lot easier
and help the damn customers in a way that they deserve to be helped.
Larry's book, Trade Shows from One Country to the Next, in its second edition, is really tailor-made for exhibit managers and event planners who are working across borders in another country. It outlines the venues, the top trade shows, the rules, regulations, exhibit, and cultural differences, and it's really designed to help you recalculate and rethink your strategies and tactics when it comes to exhibiting internationally, and it covers 45 countries.
The whole purpose of my book is not that anybody in the United States knows everything. I tried my best to collect my friends who were owners of companies and shared their wisdom with me. And the conclusion, and I'm repeating this, but there's no right way, there's no wrong way, there's only a different way. Understand and respect what's different, and you're on your way to success. After that, there's no magic formula about all this stuff, but it's we as Americans in particular to be sensitive to the rest of the world around us, really, which takes me back to Buckminster Fuller's Spaceship Earth, which took me 20 years to realize what he was talking about.
Yeah, that's great.
In conclusion, and I think you and I both, Jeff, what are you going to leave back for this world once you leave? And for me, it was something I fumbled into, exhibit design and the whole world of exhibits. And it's my, I would say legacy, but it's, I'm trying my best to leave behind all those things that I, and we didn't talk about it, and I don't want to take the time right now to do it, but I made a lot of mistakes along the way. And I should write another book about stupid errors by Larry Kulchwick. You know, the dumbest things I did that I didn't know what I did, I don't know.
Maybe I can help you on that one since I wasn't able to help you on this one. Because I know you wanted me to. But so, Larry, I know I've made my own share of mistakes culturally around the world, and I'm sure you faced that with clients who are making mistakes or just what are some of the kind of mistakes you've seen people make or you've made yourself?
Made myself. I don't think we have enough time to talk about all the mistakes I've made. But what you said is correct. It's not just cultural mistakes. They're structural, and the way you build the exhibit, there are rules, regulations. There's exhibit supplier issues. But for the most part, three or four of the biggest mistakes I made, back in 2007, I think it was, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange was my big customer, and they introduced Globex, which is global trading. All this shouting in the pit, which doesn't exist anymore, but back they were just switching out of that, and introduced Globex in London. We built an exhibit at Exhibit Group. It was beautiful, full of electronics in the United States. They introduced it in the U.S. I said, Larry, we want to take this exhibit to London and introduce it to the rest of the world. I said, okay, you know. So I took the exhibit and created and shipped it to London, only to realize that the exhibit wasn't in an exhibit facility. It was in a hotel on the second floor. The elevator was 6 foot tall, 4 foot wide. Didn't fit in the elevator, so we had to cut the exhibit in a bunch of small pieces. The electronics didn't work with the compatibility of European versus U.S. electronics. So all these things added up were things that, had I known, I could have talked to somebody, a partner in London, and said, you know, this exhibit is it, and is there a shipping dock? You didn't even think to ask. They didn't have a shipping dock either. Everything had to be unloaded by hand. And it's things you assume that can get you in big trouble. Now, yes, I had to work through the night, get it done, avoid embarrassment, but you know, it's knowing enough to ask questions in advance that you think, of course they got a shipping loading dock. Well, they didn't. Of course an elevator is at least 8 foot tall. It wasn't. Electricity, I should have known that. An experience I had with Bridgestone, which was a major Bridgestone Golf and Bridgestone Tire. And I'd go back and forth to Japan, and they would come here. And at the time, I had a black Mercedes. And whenever I would pick them up, they would sit in the back seat. They wouldn't sit in the front seat. It was like I'm the driver. Yeah, I'm not the driver. I'm going to put a hat on. But culturally, it was that, hey, I'm important. I'm here from Japan. and I'm going to sit in the back seat. And it offended me at first, but I realized that it was not
intentional.
And the interesting thing, coming from Japan, the United States, the first thing many of them wanted to do was go get sushi. And I'm thinking, if I'm going to Europe, am I going to crave, I got to find a hot dog stand? I would not do that. I want to have what you consider, but it's a desire for, you know, this is what I want. This is what my body accepts. So shame on me for imposing. How dare you not want to get a nice pizza in Chicago or a good cholesterol steak?
Yeah, sure.
But, and then the whole business of hugging and bowing and shaking hands, that's a whole issue of being aware. So you don't have to do it. Just be fully aware of, as you, especially a female, in some countries, you don't shake hands. You know, there's no touching. God forbid you hug an Asian. And we in the U.S., or you go to France or Greece, or you introduce somebody, they're hugging. Well, that's part of their cultural adaptability, but in Asia it's not that way. It seems like a very small and insignificant thing, but it can blow the deal.
Sure can.
Your Motorola, and you're trying to sell your phones, and your phones are the best in the world, but you just blew the deal not because your product wasn't good, because they didn't like the way you engaged. Mm-hmm. It was disrespectful in their mind, and much of that is ignorance. And that's what a good part of the book is about it. There's no way I could possibly discuss every cultural idiosyncrasy. There's certain things that are pretty straightforward, and here's what not to do. As opposed to what to do. I mean, courtesy, the business cards. You go in another country, you have your business card printed on the front, and how much could that cost? It's not that they don't understand English, but it's courtesy. Mm-hmm. I'm in your country, and I'm going to try my best to show respect.
Yeah, I found just doing basic greetings when you're traveling around, too, helps to break the ice quite a bit. Even if I can't carry the conversation a lot further, they appreciate usually the fact that I can do some basic greetings and please and thank you sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just learning a few, and part of that is, I'm sorry for my French, but, mm-hmm. I say a couple, just as it's courtesy. It's not, they know you don't speak French or Arabic or whatever the language might be, but it'd be demonstrate that you're sensitive. But one last one that I ran into, a company called Jasco. They're out of Japan. And they make testing equipment for the hardness of rocks. And they built an exhibit in the United States that we did. And I said, we want to introduce, very similar to Chicago American Exchange, we want to introduce this to the rest of the world. So the first show was in Orlando. Then from Orlando, we would airship the entire exhibit to Munich. And then from Munich, it would go to Tokyo. And taking an exhibit, and this is why exhibits today aren't really transported. Now, I made this mistake 20 years ago, but 40 crates, it was like $60,000 air freighting them to Munich. There wasn't a whole lot of time to ship them by any other way. It was a month later, it was the show. But one of the things in the shipping company said to me that I never knew existed, but they said, Larry, you got 40 crates, and we have to bomb the crates. And I said, you got to bomb the crates? I don't know. What are you talking about? Well, they take them to Miami, and they put them in a big tent, and they put this smoke that kills all the bugs that are in the wood.
Yeah, the beetles. Yeah.
And they bomb the crates. I said, okay, bomb the crates. Well, that was another $20,000 to bomb the crates in order for them to be accepted in this case Munich. And so we got all the crates there and set that exhibit up and then shipped it to Japan. But along the way there was all kind of hurdles that I could have avoided by cloning this exhibit in the other country instead of shipping it over. Big mistake. I mean, as exhibit advisors, we have to be smart enough to argue with your customer who insists, Larry, I want you to ship this whole exhibit over. At that point, I should have really put up an argument and say, look, I think I can build a new one there that looks just like it.
Yeah.
Probably cheaper, as cheap, than the air freight costs, the bombing and crates and all these things that weren't compatible. And again, you don't know what you don't know. And it's hard to argue with somebody who in their mind knows, I know what I want. Don't be like, tell me about all these other things.
Well, thank you so much to Larry Kulchewicz for joining me on the podcast. If you want to reach out and connect with Larry, you can find him in a variety of ways. He's very active on LinkedIn. You can also purchase a copy of his book from Amazon, or you could go to his website at www.larry, that's L-A-R-R-Y, Kulchewicz, K-U-L-C-H-A-W-I-K.com, LarryKulchewicz.com. This has been part two of a two-part interview with Larry Kulchewicz. If you haven't yet listened to part one, please do go back and listen to that one, as there's lots of good information there as well.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.